Good morning, I'm Rob. I know many of you, but if I don't, a bit about me, I'm married to Jo. Sadly, she's not here. She's looking after a little one who's quite poorly. My daughter Ellie is here, Danny's not. I'm a teacher. We tend to start these things by sharing who we are a little bit. Now, as a teacher, I'm used to kind of asking my class to do things, and I'm met with a variety of responses. Okay, there's anything from the eager to impress, you know, the person who, oh, pick me, I really want to get that praise from you. The ground swallow me up look, you know, the one, please, that I'm going to look anywhere but at you, don't look at me. The staring vaguely into space already. No one has that look yet, thankfully. We'll try and keep you not to have that look. You might notice that we're doing the Road to Emmas today, apparently, not the Road to Emmaus. That is what my autocorrect kept changing this to. Like, I mean, multiple times it changed Emmaus to Emma's. So whoever Emma's is, we're going to her house. I wanted to start with a little bit of a question and just to kind of give a bit of reason. So Easter was last weekend. It's a really wonderful, such an important weekend, and it lasts about as long as an Easter egg, doesn't it? By that I mean when it's gone, it's gone. And it can feel that way, but a bit like Christmas, it's not just kind of limited to the season that the events of Easter. So we are going to talk about the Road to Emmaus a little bit, and we're going to talk about how does that keep affecting us, not just a week on, but 2,000 years on. I've got a question, so next slide, Tina. My question is kind of bizarre journeys. I don't know if any of you have got a bizarre journey that's happened to you. I'll kind of give you an example. A bizarre journey could be anything. It could be a spontaneous trip that turned into an adventure or a nightmare. It could be a bit like mine. We went on a family holiday to Cyprus when I was a teenager. What's that, a three-hour flight? Took us 27 hours. We weren't on the plane for all of that time. We got on the plane, a part had fallen out, so they got us off the plane. They got a new part, great. We got back on the plane, guess what? That part wasn't working, so they had to drive one up from Southampton. I'm in Manchester, so they're driving from Southampton. We stayed in three different hotels for like an hour each time. We did get to visit one of the buffets, which as a teenager, and they were like, oh yeah, just fill your plate, whatever you want. That was like the best thing ever. This was kind of the audience participation. Anyone got any bizarre journeys? Please don't feel like you have to, but if anyone's got like, oh, you'll never believe it. I'll share one with you. Just in case. So this is not me. This is two friends. They live in the UK. They met at university, these two girls. One lived in Birmingham. One lived in Newcastle. And what the map kind of shows is they decided, let's meet up. Yeah, we're friends for life, not just uni. It was going to cost them £105. Now, this is 2017. I mean, that's quite cheap for a train nowadays, sadly. But £105, they're going, what? Well, your friendship is important to me. I don't know if it's worth £105. They actually were really clever about it. They went online, they got plane tickets to Malaga for both of them and a two-night hostel for less than the train ride. So instead of going on a train and meeting up in Birmingham or Newcastle for an afternoon, they spent 3 days in Spain. They had a great time. It just really bizarre, and it made obviously all the news in 2017. I found it such a funny story. But the journeys we go on, the things that can happen. Let's jump into the Bible. So, Tina, the next few slides, we're going to make sure she's paying attention here. We're going to read from Luke 24, the walk to Emmaus. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing, just interlude, where it says that same day, literally we're talking about Easter Sunday. So they'd been there for the weekend. He asked them, what are you discussing so intently as you walk along? They stopped short, sadness written across their faces. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, you must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days. What things? Jesus asked. Well, the things that happened to Jesus, the man from Nazareth, they said. He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and the other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We'd hoped he was the Messiah who'd come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago. Then some women from our group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing. They'd seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the women had said. Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on, but they begged him, "Oh, stay the night with us, since it's getting late." So he went home with them, and as they sat down to eat, he took the bread and he blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened and they recognized him, and at that moment he disappeared. They said to each other, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?" And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who'd gathered with them, who said, "The Lord has really risen. He appeared to Peter." The story goes on. I mean, that's quite enough to be getting on with. And it carries on and on. The kind of the dawning realization amongst Jesus' followers, what was actually happening. Now, the main idea, next one please, Tina. This is one of those, it's one of the earliest post-resurrection appearances of Jesus. It's a scene that we can kind of picture two people having a walk. Except it's not a walk that we would go on. If you've got small children, a walk can literally be down the road and that's enough, isn't it? Because if they're really little, they want to look at every ant and every ladybird. And if it's any longer, well, your ears start to bleed with the complaining. Yeah, as you get older, you walk more. You can walk further. You might go and climb a mountain. You might walk around a lake. But guess what? Beautiful surroundings, aren't they? You go in to enjoy it. This walk, probably not quite the same. In terms of distance, it would be like us all getting up, walking out of these doors, down the ring road to Highfields at Nottingham Uni. That's about the same distance. Probably not the most scenic walk if we were walking up a mountain or a lake. It's sandy, it's dusty, it was warm weather. It's not exactly a nice walk. And I think what makes it even harder is that these two people are in a desperate state. They've left Jerusalem completely defeated. We thought he was who he said he was, but... oh. And for many years, my thought pattern for this story was that it was shared proof that Jesus was back. It was literally, all it was to say, he's actually back. He went, "Hey, I'm actually not dead." And then he disappeared. This story does so many more things I'd love to share. So Tina, okay, number one. So this is Luke's most important contribution to the resurrection narrative. This is Jesus debunking the lie that the cross meant game over. He was actually correcting his followers, the misunderstanding that this had to happen. The Messiah had to suffer. It was necessary. He opens their eyes to the truth. Okay, really, really important. Number two, Tina, next one. It's a journey of self-healing. It shows us actually that our spirits need healing, just like our bodies when they're weary. I don't know if you're interested in football or whether you support a different team. I do not support Liverpool. However, I would find it hard to find a more amazing place than Anfield on a big match night, because the cop, when they are singing, the passion and the love, and it lifts you. I've been to Anfield once, and again, not a Liverpool fan, but I felt swept up in it. It was quite special. And what they're doing is the cop sing, "You'll Never Walk Alone." They sing it to their heroes on the pitch and those that have come before it. Now, they're singing Jerry and the Pacemakers version, but the original came from a Rodgers and Hammerstein show called Carousel. And it's sung, the song is actually written at a time of tragedy. So the words are really fitting, because what they're singing is, walk on with hope in your heart, and you'll never walk alone. And the song kind of cuts out, and the crowd just carry on singing it at that point. And it almost feels like, why are we at a football match when you're singing this? It really means something. It's a lot like, if you're here for Tina's talk a few weeks ago, she talked about one of her favorite things you've got, your photo of the footprints in the sand. This idea that at no point are there ever us on our own. You know, we've always got a second pair of footprints. Jesus is always walking with us. Well, actually, in our story, here's the proof. He was physically walking with those two disciples. They had no idea who he was. They thought, oh, he's a nice man who wants to listen to us. And what he actually does then is, he doesn't just walk with them. He leads them from despair. There's sadness written all over their face when he first joins them. And all the way to Cleopas, he's taking them to hope. It said in Isaiah 41:10, don't be afraid, for I am with you. Don't be discouraged, for I am your God. I will strengthen you and help you. I will hold you up with my victorious right hand. This is 700 years before. He'd already promised, I'm always going to be there with you. 700 years later, literally the worst moment for the early Christian church, before they named themselves that, they're thinking, oh my goodness, that's it, game over. He's there with them. Next one, Tina. So number three, the two disciples in question. Well, we know Cleopas, he's named. The other person is just, it's kind of foggier, the unnamed disciple. Now, it's really important to say they're not unnamed because they're a side character. It's not Cleopas, main character of the story, and then an extra. I think they're unnamed because we can kind of fill their shoes. The idea is that we can fulfill that role of, we were walking with Jesus, and there are times where we kind of feel like, oh, I'm a bit low, it's a bit rubbish, but it doesn't mean that we're unimportant or in the background. We're there walking with Jesus, but maybe we just haven't realized yet. Next one, Tina. Number four, Jesus wasn't revealed on the road. Really important that he's just having this discussion with them right up to the meal. He's walking, but his identity is hidden. I imagine his aura, though, probably felt quite special, because these two people in their sadness felt the need to open up. I find Jesus quite funny that he's kind of there going, oh, you're bummed, are you? Well, what happened? Just kind of little probing questions, you know. He's kind of, oh, you know, so tell me about your sadness. Relive it for me. Then I find him funny in this, because he's not just a silent walking partner. He's not there to be like, ah, there. He's not like, ah, yeah, that must be rubbish for you. You can tell he's almost got this wry smile on his face as he's listening to them, as he's literally about to take them from heartache and suffering to celebration. He knows the script, because then suddenly, though, he asks these simple questions, and then he just absolutely lays into them, it feels like. You fools, you foolish people. Now, I don't think he just stopped and went, you idiots. I don't think it's quite that harsh. I'm pretty sure they don't take it that harshly. Because verses 25 to 27, this is where he assumes the role of teacher. He talks them through Old Testament scriptures, ones that he knew inside out because they were about him, so he knew them really well. And I'm not sure that the disciples would have been offended for very long, because actually everything that he said was taking them out of hopelessness. Everything he said. And they're there. By the end, they're hanging on to every single word that this teacher is saying to them. Every word is taking them closer to the truth that it's finished for good. The suffering meant for us is no longer for us. Now, sadly, I'll admit I'm a fool. I'm pretty sure Jesus would say to me, you fool, sometimes, and maybe you're like me. Jesus' words on the road to Emmaus, they're for me and they're for you. Why do we doubt the Son of God who fulfilled prophecies for me? And yet we do it all the time. Next one, please, Tina. So then we get to point five. The disciples invited him. Now, it was custom of the culture of the time that you invited people in for a meal, particularly if it was getting late. So they were being hospitable. And you'd invite someone in for a meal for a multitude of reasons. It might literally just have been, it's getting dark, so we need to do the right thing and all come and stay. But the eagerness with how they're doing it means, I think, even if it wasn't the custom, this was a really important step. They had not had enough of what he had to say. But we can sometimes get to this point where we walk with Jesus a bit, we're in something, we're a bit sorrowful, we're a bit down. God's there. We might come to church and go, oh yeah, no, I do feel a bit better now. All right, cheers. See you later. Have a nice rest of your walk, don't we? And I'm going to go into my house because actually I haven't cleaned up. I haven't got much in for food. I'm a bit tired. I don't really want to have the conversation. I'm being a little bit silly with this, but understand it can be like that. All right, thanks. I'm going to carry on though. There's this ongoing thirst for more. The disciples show us that. They're like, you've got to come and have a meal. I think if Jesus had been like, no, seriously, I'm all right actually. I don't think they'd have gone, ugh. I think they'd have been taking his hand going, no, you're coming in. You're sitting at our table because we've not had enough. We need more of what you've got to say. This attitude of inviting Jesus into their home meant that change could happen at a deeper level. Next one, please, Tina. 6. So Jesus sits with them, he eats a meal, and then it's the big reveal, except it's not a magic trick. He didn't sit down and go, watch the cups, where's the ball? Ah, I'm Jesus! It's none of that. The revelation occurred over the course of the meal. He took the bread, he broke it. But again, I think it was over the meal, this dawning realization. A little bit like, if ever you watched a movie, and really early on you've gone, he's going to be bad. You know, yeah. Oh! She's a wrong'un, I know that, yeah, you watch this, or he's the father, that sort of thing, right? Now, I don't know about you, I take a massive amount of pride whenever I get one of these right, and I don't care if it's Wallace and Gromit, and it's the most obvious thin plot ever. Oh, that's the penguin, I reckon. I would still take a huge amount of pride in my achievement. If you ever call, I don't know if you're like me, but absolutely take this pride, but again, I think the disciples' dawning realization is bigger than I've ever felt in that situation. Because with every second that goes by, they go, hang on. It couldn't be, could it? You can imagine their heart lifting and soaring. This man, he's the one, isn't he? And then it says he disappears. But that is a bit like a magic trick. Bit of smoke and he's gone, but it wasn't like a, oh my goodness, where's he gone? I think it's more of a, it's almost like he disappears, but they're still there at the table going, oh, he's back. He never went. It's almost like he's gone, but they've carried on in that moment. Next one, please, Tina. And then even beyond that, we're told that the disciples were burning with enthusiasm. Just by being with Jesus for a walk down a dusty road. They were even willing, within an hour, so you've just got back from a long journey. I mean, if ever you've got home from holiday, or even just a busy day out, and you sit down, you go, this is dangerous because I'm not going to get up again. Oh, I've still got to do all these things. And just the thought of doing the jobs is knackering, isn't it? And within an hour, they're back on the road. They're going back the 7 miles, walking down that dusty track. It's night, so it's a bit cooler, but who cares? We've got to go and tell people what's happened. They're going back to Jerusalem. They're going to share this good news. It couldn't wait. Jesus hasn't given the Great Commission yet. He's not kind of said, well, actually, that's the plan, but it's already happening. One walk with Jesus and the disciples are going, I've got to tell the world about this. That missional mindset, it does come with an enthusiasm. We can't keep it in, and we absolutely shouldn't. Next one, please, Tina. And then I thought, okay, that's quite enough. But as I'm sitting there and you're reading, I thought, there's more. There's even more from this, another theme. So the narrative of this journey, how else does it matter to us? It's also a bit of an issue with discernment. this idea, and I read a commentator, Mobley, he asked the question, how does one discern the risen Christ? How, it's a great question, even for us in the year 2024. How do we understand that Christ is still the risen Christ today? We're in a world, we're surrounded by a world where knowledge can be got like that. Pull up my phone, swipe of a finger, I've got knowledge. But again, I use the term loosely because what's the source? Is it trustworthy? Yeah? Are we getting fed good information? We've talked about it before, and I've had conversations with people where you kind of went, well, I read this thing on Facebook, and you go, oh, my goodness. My kids at school, I don't mean my kids, Danielle. My kids at school were in a lesson. Their favourite thing to say is, oh, yeah, when I'm teaching them something. They go, oh, yeah, I saw this YouTube short on that. And I go, okay. YouTube shorts like YouTube video, but just shorts. And I'm like, okay. And then they'll say, oh, yeah, I saw this YouTube short. And you go, here we go. And they went, yeah, it's about sharks. And then they'll tell me this fact. And I go, and who told you that? Because if it wasn't David Attenborough, I don't believe it. Because YouTube short, I could make a YouTube short. And I tell them this, I could make a YouTube video and say that the sky is green. And I could say all these facts. And the problem is, there'd probably be 100 people within an hour going, you're absolutely right. The sky, look, the sky is green. I'm trying to teach kids. I mean, can you imagine that? But we're surrounded by, what's your source? Carl Jung, heard of him? Some of you have. A Swiss psychoanalyst. You're a brainier lot than I am. I was like, who's this guy? Apparently he's very famous. He knows Sigmund Freud. There you go. I know, I've heard of Freud. He was one of the people in his psychoanalyst who was kind of looking at stories, and he's a very clever man, and he lived a long time ago, trying to explain things, because as a human race, we're very good at trying to explain things, correct? And he went, ah! It's like Hans Christian Andersen's fairy tale from 1835 called The Travelling Companion. And you go, all right, okay. This is the same Andersen who wrote, like, The Little Mermaid. Yeah? A fairy tale. So you've got a very famous man saying, this story, well, it's a copy of a fairy tale. And we go, okay, I read The Travelling Companion, okay? There are dragons and all sorts in that. It's actually incredibly bizarre. It's fascinating. It's a really good story that's got nothing like the Road to Emmaus that we've just read. So even a very clever man has gone, I can explain that, and done a hideous job. That's my point. Again, we're in a world, though, where everything needs explaining. So what does Jesus do? Does he just go, trust me, I'm really smart, I know these things? No, as they're walking on the road to Emmaus, he walks them through the Old Testament. He pinpoints the exact verses and chapters from 700 years ago where prophecies were made that said this, Isaiah 50, 4 to 9, Isaiah 52, 13 to 53, 12, Psalm 22. All of these talk about the Messiah's suffering. Jesus is re-revealing to them 700-year-old prophecies. He was like, oi, you know this. He had to suffer. And they're going, oh yeah. Because isn't it funny, a bit of emotion can sometimes get in the way. It says in verse 27, explaining from all the scriptures. This is the best bit. I can imagine he walked them through the Old Testament. He went, hello, you've got the Old Testament. And all of it points to what? It points to the coming of the Messiah and the salvation he'd bring. Even though they'd seen and heard things in Jerusalem, he was encouraging them to look beyond even sometimes physical evidence. He was encouraging them to say, yeah, I know you've just left Jerusalem where Messiah died and was in a tomb. And someone said, oh, he's gone then. And you've gone, oh, yeah, must be gone. Come on. Sometimes we need to trust in Scripture. We need to trust in the Lord. even if the things we're hearing around us might be saying the opposite. And I love the way that Jesus spends time answering questions with patience and full answers. He's a lot better man than I am. And I say this as a father, as well as a teacher. Anyone who's spent time with children will know that they ask questions. And you know what? Sometimes it's easier to give a quick answer. I want to answer that. I don't want to say shush, not now, but I'm going to give you a quick answer. And I'm here to tell you, if you don't know already, it doesn't always work, does it? Where does honey come from? That's what I was asked in a science lesson. Good topic, right? We're not in PE. That's good. We're doing states of matter, so okay, liquid, solid, yeah, maybe we can talk about that. So, sadly, the state of education is we usually have got a lesson content I need to get through. I'm a bit of a rebel. I like to teach kids, and I like to encourage them to ask questions. So I'm like, okay, well, they've asked a question. I'll give it a quick answer. I say, well, okay, well, you know, they collect nectar. They take it back to their hive. Not too much detail. It was short enough. It answered the question. Great. Can we move on to how ice changes to water now? Yeah, but how do bees collect the nectar? Okay, fine. Here we go. Running out of time. Well, they fly into the flower and they wiggle about a bit. This is me reenacting. The nectar sticks to them, they fly to another flower. It's actually really important for flowers too. Oh no, why have I said that? So why is it important to flowers then? Well, it helps the flowers to grow and be healthy. I mean, you can research it. This is a great one. You can research it in your own time. Yeah, be a learner, brilliant. Okay, it's very fascinating. Sir, no, please, I know you've got to get on, but I've got one really important question. Fine, last question, class. Why did you wiggle your bum when you pretend to be the bee? That was the bit I lost them. Not the questions, that was the bit I lost the class. The problem is that half of them weren't surprised that that's what I did. Through all my explanations, I tried to save time. Actually, I'd have been better just getting a video of a bee for 1 minute and gone, there you go, right, moving on. I ended up down a rabbit hole with a giggling class who were just probably more confused than when we started. Actually, sometimes, last one, it can be easier to give a definitive overview than a balanced reason view. We can sometimes think, and whoever you're talking to, I don't know if they'll understand this, it's too big a theme. I'm a bit worried that we might go too long and I've not got time to explain it. And again, I'm not just talking about kids here. Maybe this could be a question. Someone asks you about Jesus or about church and you kind of go, I've really wanted this conversation, but where on earth do I go from it? Because if I tell them about that, that's a bit weird. And that just sounds a bit lame. And we're being honest here. Some of the things that you know, we try and explain and we go, I want to try and make this sound cool. I'm not saying you're not cool. You guys are the coolest. I kind of mean more my own insecurities because, again, what I'm doing is I'm trying to dress up God when he's amazing. Band, as you come back, I'm going to kind of close this up. What I absolutely love is that you've got two disciples walking on a dusty road in absolute sadness. And little did they know that by the end of their journey, they were going to stand in victory. 2,000 years later, you and I walk the same walk. And I don't mean that in necessarily a good way, because often we're walking in despair and sadness. And I'd love us, and I'm talking to myself here, I'd love to remember more and more that I'm standing in victory. Let's consider it, our walk that we're in right now. Because obviously, as the band are about to play, we're going to reflect on these things, and I'd love us to think, okay, where am I on the journey? Am I currently leaving something horrible, a really sad situation? And I know I need to walk, but where I'm going, it's not going to feel any better. Or am I currently walking it and it's agony, or there's, let's not be negative, maybe I'm walking in joy at the minute. Brilliant. Maybe I'm excited, maybe I'm nervous, maybe I'm anxious, whatever it is. Maybe I'm walking down a street or I'm about to get a plane across the world, figuratively. Maybe there's going to be some delays, some cancellations, some changes of plans. It doesn't matter which part of your walk that you're on, because in every situation, this still rings true. It wasn't just for Easter Sunday. It's not the thing that we say at this time of year and go, great, Sunday roast and Easter egg time. Because it's good news for all time. He is risen. Band and Rachel are gonna come back. So I thought, okay, how do I close? My prayer for myself, and I'm going to pray it for you all as well, is that God is present for you today. He's walking with you right now. And that dawning realization, that revelation would start to happen now. Like you're sitting with him, and he's breaking the bread and you're going, oh, hang on. That's my prayer for myself in my situations and for you in yours. Revelation can be a slow reveal though. It's not a magic trick. He's not going to go, ta-da, I'm here. It happens though when we invite him in. So when you get home, we can make it a real physical thing. Invite him into your home with you. Invite him as you walk through those doors to go home or to go on to your next stop on your journey. Say, right, come on, can you get in the car with me? I need you to be next to me here. Let me encourage you to invite him in today.